Hi, folks. I'm Bob Main. I carry a gun because I can't carry a cop. Welcome to episode number 333 of your Handgun World podcast. This is a practical show done by a practical, everyday guy like me. Well, I hope that last week you enjoyed the lecture that Glenn Tate gave at our Beyond Concealed Carry Enhanced course that we taught up in the Olympic Peninsula in Squim, Washington. Like I said last week, I just want to recap that a little bit. He was talking about a lot of Washington concealed carry law and do's and don'ts and things like that. But did you notice that it applies to just about everywhere? A lot of what he said. Some of it was Washington specific, I understand. But a lot of it, I thought, really applied to anybody that carries a firearm, especially the parts about being responsible and conducting yourself in a responsible manner. That's so important. This week, I've got some voicemails that I'm going to answer. But first of all, I want to give you a little bit of an update on my Single Stack 9 challenge that I am doing. It looks as though from shooting and carrying these four Single Stack 9s now for, I guess it's been about a month and a half or so, it looks like the XDS is probably not going to be for me. And I don't mean to offend any XD fans out there, any Springfield XD fans. They're great guns. They're high quality. They're well built. They're good shooters. They got decent triggers. So please don't take offense if you love the XDs. And if you love the XDs, great, then stick with the XDs. For me, for a single stack, low capacity 9mm, it's just a little too heavy, and I don't really care for the trigger all that much. I think it could have a little bit better trigger compared to some of the other 9mm that are out on the market. And if it brought more to the table, like for example, if it wasn't so heavy, and if the magazines weren't so long, the magazines are long. Especially the magazines with the extension, you know, the extended magazines that hold a little bit more capacity and that have the extra plastic on the bottom of them so that you can get a full-handed firing grip. Yeah, it's a little heavy for what you get, you know. So what I'm finding for me is the Smith & Wesson Shield 9mm and the Glock 43. Those are going to be my go-to single-stack nines. You know, and my Car PM9, I love it. And I'm going to hang on to my Car PM9, and I carry that once in a while. You know when I carry the Car PM9? Is when I really want to carry the 9mm, and I've got to be really, really discreet to make sure that nobody knows that I'm carrying. That's the place for the Car PM9. And really, for me, I can conceal the Shield and the Glock 43 just as easily as I can conceal the PM9. So it's probably going to see less carry time, even though I've got plenty of confidence in that gun because I've shot it so much and I've owned a Car PM9 for so long. I've got plenty of confidence in it, and it's still got a beautiful double action trigger, a very, very smooth, wonderful double action trigger, probably the best double action trigger that any semi-automatic pistol has, in my opinion. So I think that's going to be what I'm going to be sticking with. And I tell you what I'm finding out, because every once in a while, while I'm doing this single stack 9 challenge, I go back to my beloved Glock 19. Yeah, even though it's a double stack gun, even though it's a higher capacity, a little bit heavier gun, I tell you, here's what I'm finding out. With Jason Christensen's Concealment Solutions Cobra, I love that Cobra holster, that outside the waistband carry. Boy, Jason's got a great design. It's a great design. It holds the pistol tight into my body so that it conceals very well, but still facilitates a real nice, fast draw. I tell you, I can carry the Glock 19 just about anywhere, anytime, and nobody is the wiser. So, you know, it makes me think, why do I want to carry anything else? The G19 has always been my primary carry gun. And I'm really warming up to the M&P a lot lately. The M&P, you know, I tell you what, when we taught Beyond Concealed Carry in SQUIM, Chuck let me shoot quite a few rounds through his M&P. Chuck, thank you very much. Way to go. Thank you very much. I appreciate you letting me shoot your M&P. He let me shoot his M&P full size, the 4 1/4 inch barrel, not the 5 inch barrel. Oh, man, what a sweet shooter. I mean, Smith & Wesson, they have built a pistol that is incredibly reliable and a sweet shooter. Same thing holds true with their Shield. You know, out of all the single-stack 9s that I've shot, the Smith & Wesson M&P Shield continues to be the one that feels like a big gun. It's comfortable and fun to shoot, and that's so important in a carry gun, because a carry gun you have to practice with a lot. You know, I've said that many times. How many of you practice a lot with your carry pistol? How many of you do? You should. I mean, let's face it, you're going to bet your life on that pistol. If you're going to bet the life, your life and the lives of your loved ones on that pistol, you better shoot it a lot and you better practice a lot with it. So if you got a carry pistol that's no fun to shoot, get rid of it. Because you got to be able to shoot. You got to be able to give it a 1,000-round trigger job and even more. You got to be able to shoot your hot-loaded defensive ammo through it and feel good about shooting it, because that's what you're going to rely on, right? So anyway, I'm really warming up to the M&P. And I'll tell you what, it's, you know, the M&P full size, it's really not all that big. It's really not all that big. And, you know, here in Texas, we got open carry coming in January. But even right now, it has to be a blatant attempt or a blatant intent not to conceal to be considered in violation of the law. So I'm not really in violation of the law. And with Jason Christensen's Cobra holsters, I can carry outside the waistband, and it's so comfy, and I can carry a gun that has more capacity, and capacity is very important. Capacity is very important. Go listen to the most recent Pro Arms podcast. There might have been one posted since then. I think there was. Go listen to episode 90, interview with Officer Tim Grammons. Now, I understand we are not police officers as concealed carriers. I get it. I've said many times, getting your concealed carry license doesn't deputize you. Please understand that and don't think that it's your duty or your obligation, or that you really should even be going out there and coming to the defense of others and trying to stop bank robbers from going about doing what they're doing, because that's what this guy was doing. That's what this officer was doing. So the chances that a police officer is going to find themselves in that situation is slim. Yeah, and you know, I'm not going to spend a lot of time talking about that. You just got to listen to that episode at the Pro Arms podcast. Okay, Pro Arms podcast, episode 90, the interview with Officer Tim Grammons. It is riveting. It really is. But I still favor capacity, so I can carry my G19 so easily, and a Glock 26 so easily. And for those of you that own similar guns, like if you have an M&P 9, or if you have an XD 9 with a 3.3 barrel or 3.8-inch barrel or whatever, if you've got those compact and subcompact guns that are double stack that have decent capacity, you know, the XD Mod 2 is one that seems to be pretty popular and has decent capacity. Those really are not, with the right belt and the right holster, I've said it many times and it's so true, they're just really not that hard to conceal. And so anyway, the point that I'm trying to make is my single stack 9s are probably, once I settle on exactly which are going to be my go-to 9mm, which I think I'm getting pretty close to settling on, I'm probably still not going to carry them that often. They're going to be my go-to backup guns. That's what they're going to be. They're going to be my go-to backup firearms, with my G19 or an M&P9 as my primary carry. And yeah, I'm a 9mm guy. You know, I don't believe in the caliber wars, and I just, you know, hey, I don't have time and I don't want to waste your time getting into all that. All handguns suck. Yep, I know, I said that. stopping power and, you know, hitting power and blah, 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 and penetration and all that. They all suck. And you know, what is it, over 85? I think it's over 85% of the people shot with a handgun live. I'll say that again. About 85% or a little bit more of people that are shot with a handgun round survive. Think about that. So your goal is to stop them. And, of course, you know, I'm not about killing. That's not... That doesn't line up with my faith, and it doesn't line up with my morality. Of course, my morality comes from my faith, and this is not about killing people. I don't advocate that. I advocate stopping bad people from doing bad things to good people, and for good people to save their life. Would you agree? I hope so. All right, so let's get to the first voicemail.
Hey, Bob. Jeff in California. Enjoy the podcast. Had a quick question. I'd like to get your thoughts on. I have a concealed carry permit. And the company that I work for has a no firearms policy on property, even the parking lot. I commute 40 miles each way to work into a not-so-great area of California. And that's one of the reasons why I wanted my concealed carry permit, because there has been a lot of violence in the city that I work in. I wanted to get your thoughts on taking a firearm to work, leaving it in the vehicle, maybe parking it on the city street. I do have a Tuffy lockbox for the vehicle. So that I'm legal and leaving it in the car when I do have to do that. But I would have to park off property in a very small residential where cars do get broken into in that area. So I wanted to get your thoughts. I've had my permit now for about 2.5 months, and I just haven't been taking it with me on my commute to work, which I feel vulnerable for doing that. So look forward to your thoughts. Thank you.
Okay, my comment on that is, you know, that's a tough situation when your employer doesn't allow firearms. And, you know, some of them don't allow firearms in the building. Some of them don't allow firearms in the parking lot. You know, in Texas, that's not allowed. In Texas, we passed a state law recently where employers are not allowed to forbid carry to a place of employment as long as the pistol is kept in the parking lot in the owner's vehicle. But if you're in a state where that's not allowed and your employer doesn't allow it, I guess the best advice I can give is, do what you have to do. Don't lose your job over it. Please, don't lose your job over it if you really like your job. Do what you have to do. Park where you have to park. Sir, I'm glad that you've got a safe to keep your handgun when it's in your vehicle unattended. Don't leave unattended loaded firearms in your vehicle that are not in a safe. So I'm glad that you're doing that. And this is kind of a tough one to give advice to, because, you know, I am not you and I am not in your position, and I don't want you to lose your job. So do what you can. Keep yourself protected. Carry, though. Carry, carry, carry. Carry whenever you can. Carry on your body whenever you can. And take your pistol off and stow it safely locked up when you cannot carry. I'm also moving away from off-body carry, even when I'm driving. On-body carry, appendix carry, I can do very easily when I'm driving, very comfortably for hours and hours and hours, and it's far more accessible than keeping the gun in my glove box or keeping it in my console or even keeping it between the seat and the console. You know, I used to do that a lot. That just doesn't work anymore. I can't access my gun fast enough. So anyway, this caller called in kind of a tough question, but that's pretty much my advice on that. Just, you know, work around it as much as you can. Don't break the law, and don't break your company's policy. Okay, let's get to the next one.
Hi, Bob. This is Chad from Grand Rapids, Michigan. Just wanted to call in and say I appreciate your podcast that you do. Appreciate your faith that you share. And we are praying for you on your medical journeys that you're on, you and your wife also. And we always appreciate hearing the good news and good feedback on how things are going for you folks. I had a situation that happened to me a couple of weeks ago that I thought would be pertinent to your show. I'm a runner. I like to exercise, and for exercise, I like to run. That's just what I like to do. And I live out in the country, and so I'll run country miles. And so I'll tell my wife I'm running around the block, and that means I'm going to run 4 miles. One intersection to the next is a mile, then the next intersection a mile. And so I'll run around the block, and that's 4 miles. And when I run, I do carry a pistol with me. Being out in the country, I feel better having the pistol with me. And I have the pistol wear product, the holster that I wear around my midsection. It works great for running. And there are a lot of dogs out on my path. I'm very familiar with the different houses and who has dogs, who doesn't. And some I know where the old dogs are that come out and they just bark and they don't do anything. I know where the houses are where they have underground fences. I know where the little dogs are that like to come out and yip at my ankles. And I even know where the houses are that have free-range chickens. And I know to look out for them because they also have a rooster. And whenever you have chickens and hens, the rooster's job is to protect the chickens. So I keep my eye out for that guy when I run by there. But there's one house that here lately has had a pit bull at it. And it's a typical, stereotypical, big, strong pit bull. And I'm not trying to offend anybody that has a pit bull or loves pit bulls. That's not the purpose of this. I'm just stating a fact that this is the scenario. So when I run by that house, I'm aware of the possible threat there and have never had any issues. So this particular day I'm running and I get about half mile from home as I'm working out my run. I'm doing a 9 mile run about half mile from home. I text my wife saying I'm about half mile from home, put my phone up and I keep running. I come up to this house and I don't see anything, so I'm running along fine. And as soon as I'm parallel with it, and running right next to it, all of a sudden I hear the dog barking, and it's a loud barking. And immediately the thought in my mind was, okay, here it goes, this is it, I'm going to be in the fight for my life right now. And so without even looking, I did not even turn my head. I'm left-handed, so I immediately took my right hand, pulled up my shirt, and took my left hand, pulled the pistol out. Smoothly, had no problems with that, turned my safety off, racked the slide chamber around. At the same time, as I'm pulling it out, then I turn my head towards the house, and I do see the dog at a full sprint at me. Now, the house is about 50 feet off the road, and then there's an old-fashioned country barn that's, you know, maybe 25 to 50 feet behind that. So I don't know where the dog came from or what, but I'm guessing it came from behind the house somewhere. But it was a dead sprint for me. And I could hear the owner yelling at it to stop, 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 and stop coming. But the dog was not listening to the owner. As I see it coming, I'm on the opposite side of the road. So it's a two-lane road, and then there's the ditch, and then there's the yard, and then the house. And so I'm on the opposite side of the road. And as I'm pulling my pistol out, and turning my head to look, I'm also turning my body, and now I'm starting to run backwards. So I'm trying to put more distance between me and the threat. And so now I'm running backwards, and now I have my pistol out at a full two-hand extension, and I'm aiming. And I'm going through my head as to when do I engage and actually deal with this threat. And so I've put in my mind that if this dog comes and crosses the center line of the road, the yellow dotted line, then I would put a round into the ground right in front of the dog and then pull up higher and then just take care of the threat as needed. Well, sure enough, the dog comes running through the yard and then it comes through the ditch. All the time I'm backpedaling and running backwards, trying to put more distance between me and the dog. The dog comes into the road and it stops at that yellow dotted line and never, ever crosses it. And I keep running backwards and moving away. So I'm very thankful that I didn't have to do anything. Thankful that dog did not cross the line. And granted, this all took place, the whole incident was 8 seconds, I would say, or maybe, I don't even think it was 10 seconds, it was between 8 to 10 seconds. All this stuff is happening. All of my movements are happening. All these thoughts are going through my head. When do I make a decision to pull the trigger? And that was my decision line, because he would have been, you know, within 5 to 8 feet of me at that point. So as I'm far enough away, the dog goes back to the house, and I reholster my pistol, and I look down, and much to my dismay, I notice I have a jam. Evidently, when I racked the slide, I already had a round in the chamber, and I forgot that I was carrying it that way. And so in my haste, when I racked the slide, the round that was in the chamber did not come out completely and got stuck in the slide, and I had no clue. I know if I would have press-checked, I would have known, and then I would have to clear the slide quickly if I would have needed to, but I was very discouraged with that. The whole situation I was very happy with, and the fact that I was able to pull my pistol, take the safety off, and engage. I was happy with that. I know, Bob, that you're not a safety person, and I totally understand the situation with that, but I'm not as well-trained and confident, so I prefer to use a safety. And I understand if you say something about that. I listen to you enough. I know your stance on the safety. And I'll tell you, the reason why I racked that slide is because I carry another pistol a lot of times that I do not have a round in the chamber. And again, a lot of this is just kind of me being ignorant or me being not confident in what I'm doing. And so I'm trying to be a little more safe, I guess. But because of this, the way I train with this pistol and with that pistol, and it's a different manual of arms and different situation, my body and a situation just responded and reacted to the way I've been training or the way I tried to do things. I kind of got a hodgepodge of reactions. All of it went smoothly except for the jam, which was a big deal. So, but after that, I came to the conclusion, and talking to my wife too, I'm going to buy a different pistol for my carry, and keep the same manual of arms for all my pistols. So that when I have to pull and when I have to respond, it's all the same way. So anyway, and I'm not going to mention the pistols that I carry, because that's not the purpose of this either. I just want to let you know the incident that happened to me and how it happened and how it worked out. And I'm thankful that I did not have to do anything and have to commit to pulling that trigger. And I'm very thankful for that, that God protected me with that scenario. But anyway, just want to share that with you, Bob, and appreciate all your thoughts and comments. And like I said, I do know your stance on safeties, and so you can reprimand me if you want. I won't feel bad at all. So, but anyway, thanks for your help, Bob, and keep up the good work. Goodbye.
How about that, huh? You know, animals. I think we sometimes forget about the fact that there are occasions we have to protect ourselves from animals, sometimes from dogs that are out of control. Now, I don't want anybody that owns a pit bull to think that I'm against pit bulls or anything. I'm not against you owning a pit bull. You want to own a pit bull? That's fine. That's up to you. I wouldn't own a pit bull, but you can if you want to. I'm just giving out a warning to everybody out there that carries a gun for protection. There are times you can't just always focus on defending yourself against humans. You know, and we sometimes do that. And I got to admit, you know, training classes are that way. You know, defending yourself against a bad guy. That's what they teach. What about animals? Yeah, that's important. That's important. You have to learn that. You have to be ready for that. You have to have techniques. You got to think it out in advance. When you take a class or when you go to the range, you know, if you can go to a range that's more than just a square range, shoot at some targets that are low. Shoot at some targets that are low to the ground. Because animals are going to be generally low to the ground. A mean dog, a dog that wants to do harm to you, is going to be low to the ground. That is likely going to be moving. Think about that. Moving, shooting a moving target. You're likely going to be on the move. If there is a dog that wants to attack you, I sure hope you would not stand still. I sure hope that you would try to move, but you may have to defend yourself against animals. So, you know, to this caller, thank you for calling this in. And remember, folks, I'm in the Handgun World mobile studio. So, you know, I'm doing the best I can here from memory, because I did listen to all of these voicemails a couple of times before recording this episode. But, I think these are excellent calls that are coming in. So, let's take a quick break, and I'll be right back.
An Australian law enforcement officer called their gun registration, quote, an elaborate system of arithmetic with no tangible aim. They also called its crime control use a fallacy. New Zealand police call their gun registration system useless. Canadian registration has cost 1,600% more than originally projected, and a top Canadian cop said it does nothing to take one illegal gun off the street. And in Germany, some people estimate that upwards of 80% of all guns there are still not registered. So why do some senators, and some presidents for that matter, think that it will work in America? Arm yourself with facts to strip the gun control industry bare. Visit gunfacts.info and get your free copy of Gun Facts. Called Indispensable by Cam Edwards of NRA News, Gun Facts is your rapid reference guide to debunking gun control myths and shaming politicians into obedience. www.gunfacts.info.
Okay, before I get to the next voicemail, I want to mention that earlier, you know, I was talking about my single stack 9 challenge. You know, another gun that I really got to mention that is, even though it's not a 9mm, I've really got to mention the Glock 42. Ever since I fixed my problems, or Glock fixed up my problems with my G42, because I think it had a few issues when I first got it. And, of course, today's Glock 42s that you buy, you know, they've been out a while, and I think that Glock has worked some of the bugs out, if there really were any bugs, but it seemed like, you know, maybe I had one of the rare ones that did, but it is a fine weapon. The capacity's not great on the Glock 42, but it is what it is. It's a small gun. It's a 380. I'm carrying it today because I'm headed to an appointment where I really, really have to be discreet. Most of you know I'm in sales. I'm in corporate sales. I'm in an industry where I'm selling to, you know, corporate people and things like that. And I'm in environments where I really just can't make it obvious that I'm carrying a firearm. But there's some ammo out there. Ammo made by Precision One. Ammo made by Hornady. Ammo made by Spear and Federal HST in 380 caliber. That has good penetration and good expansion. And, you know, the Glock 42, for a 380, the Glock 42 has a longer barrel than most 380s. Think about that. It's got a longer barrel than most 380s. It means you're going to get better velocity out of your rounds, out of the 380s that you shoot, and probably better performance. Carr Arms makes a nice 380 out there as well. Not just the P380, but I think they make a larger one. I can't remember the model number, C380 or something like that, or CT380. You can look it up. But, you know, there are some real nice shooting 380s. And the Glock 42, I can be very accurate with it. I can shoot it very easily. 380 ammo is not as expensive as it used to be. And I can stock up on 380 ammo. And it's not that expensive to give my 380, my Glock 42, 1,000 round trigger job. I'm not quite there yet, but getting closer and closer. So I'd be remiss if I didn't mention the Glock 42, even though it's not a 9mm. I've totally changed my attitude about the Glock 42. Didn't like it when I first got it just because it had issues, but I will say that it is the sweetest, nicest, softest shooting handgun. It's one of the best on the market that is pleasant to shoot, and people are going to want to train with it. So, and that's important. That's very important. Okay, well, enough on that. The next voicemail is Tom from Ferguson, Missouri. Yeah, that's right, Ferguson. And, you know, recently there has been some rioting again in Ferguson, and I'm sure you're aware of all that. And I want you to listen to both of Tom's voicemails here. Because he, you know, just like last time when he sent me voicemails, he really has some things to say that will make you think about, why do we do this? Why do we carry guns? You know, I have my funny tagline, because I carry a gun because I can't carry a cop. But really, you know, we carry firearms, own firearms, even long guns. We do it to be prepared, and you gotta be prepared for just about anything, folks. And you know, you never know when civil disobedience and rioting is going to find you in your city. You know, I've always said, we don't go out looking for trouble, but sometimes trouble finds us. Right? And we've got to be ready for that. And we have to know what we're doing, and we have to plan for that. So, you know, I want you to listen to Tom's voicemails here. Here you go.
This is Tom from Ferguson again. I wanted to give you a quick update. This is Tuesday, August 11th. This is a quiet and peaceful morning so far. Last night was Monday. There was rioting. And protesters also blocked down one of our main interstates here in Missouri and St. Louis, outside of Ferguson. My wife was stuck in that for about 20 minutes. Wasn't that big of a deal. Sunday night, there was more rioting, more protesting, and a youth got shot by the police after he allegedly, I'll use that word allegedly because you have to, he allegedly opened fire on police officers with a stolen handgun, a Sig Sauer handgun from the reports. If you believe that, it should be fairly open and shut. If you don't believe that, well, that raises questions, right? If you don't believe the official story. Anyway, the thing that really concerned me to start off this whole process was on Friday when I saw two out-of-state school buses. They were painted, they were repainted, and they had AC units added to their rooftops, and they both had out-of-state plates. One of them was from Illinois, and one of them was from Georgia. Most of the East St. Louis area would be close enough to bus people in for the day. Chicago would be worth the trip to bus people down for the weekend. So if it's coming on Friday, I'm going to take a wild stab and say it was people being bused down from Chicago or coming down of their own accord. I'm not sure which. But either way, it does appear like we have some out-of-state agitators trying to come in and basically stir up and incite panic and rioting. So anyway, I just wanted to give a quick rundown of that because I thought you might want to know. So my real reason for calling is to talk about the right to self-defense. So this whole incident started over Michael Brown, who did not have a handgun or a knife. And when he attacked a police officer, that police officer shot and killed him. Okay, so if you believe that story, then you have to say that it was either an act of self-defense, if you believe the story, or it was not. So, from a perspective of self-defense, this whole rioting has been a riot and a protest against self-defense, in as much as it's a protest about Michael Brown. I do believe that there are other issues that are not related to Michael Brown that have also been the subject of protesting. I'm not talking about any of those. I'm specifically talking about the right to self-defense. So last year, a group called the Oath Keepers stood on top of some of the local businesses. They held AR rifles, and they defended some of the businesses. The St. Louis County shut them down and told them that they had to leave. They used the argument that you are providing private security to a business that you do not own, therefore you have to be licensed as a security guard in the city of St. Louis. And by city, I mean county. So they used that to shut down these people's right to defend this property, the property that they were defending, the Oath Keepers. So it's hard to look at all of this as a whole and not see that and not draw the conclusion that the right to self-defense itself is under attack, at least partly, during all these Ferguson protests and all these Ferguson rioting. Not only from the protesters, but also from the police. Now, last night, a couple of Oath Keepers, four to five of them, from what it sounds like, did stroll through West Florissant with plate carriers and AR-15 rifles. Not automatic rifles, like most of the reports showed. Anyway, it is a different fight, in my mind, than it is in any place else, and I've never heard it couched that way, but every time I see the protests and every time I hear any of the reports, that's how I see it. Anyway, take care and God bless, and I hope you have a great week.
Well, yeah, it's getting tough out there. Yeah, no doubt. I work in home invasions, mostly. Some murder, occasional rape, and I'm a huge advocate of gun control. Absolutely. Competition is stiff, and it doesn't help that every time I kick in a door or smash a window, that I face the possibility of being shot and killed. Listen, the fact is, allowing citizens to own guns creates a hostile work environment for me and my associates. No one should have to work under those conditions. I say make them all illegal. Absolutely. Make all gun ownership illegal. I mean, I break the law for a living. I'm a professional, so it doesn't really bother me. I mean, but personally, knowing that most homeowners don't have guns, that would make me a lot more comfortable, more confident, and it would surely increase productivity. No doubt. No doubt.
Your local violent criminals work hard and put their lives on the line every time they attempt to murder, rape, abduct, or assault a member of the citizenry. They desperately need your help. With your support, there may finally come a day when a violent criminal can have his way with you or someone you love without the fear, anxiety, and stress caused by knowing there's a possibility his victim might be armed. Please show your support by voting for stronger anti-gun legislation, because criminals prefer unarmed citizens.
Hey, during this quick little break and intermission, I just want to remind you, we got some classes coming up. There is still one spot left in Ohio. One. It's been open for a while, and then we're going to... The class is sold out if we get one more sign up. So, next month, Ben Branham and I are coming to Ohio Beyond Concealed Carry Advanced. Plenty of sign-ups for the October 10th class in San Antonio, Beyond Concealed Carry. It's a one-day. Pretty much the starting point. And the advanced class, where Chaz Murray from the Road Gunner podcast and Tracy Thronberg, a Mag 40 instructor, staff instructor, they are going to join Ben Branham and myself the weekend before Thanksgiving in San Antonio to teach an advanced two-day class. And that's going to be a very good one. We don't have 2016 planned yet, but we are going to soon. Please don't forget about the Shooters Club. I just put a new video on the Shooters Club. That was filmed at Beyond Concealed Carry Enhanced out in Squim. And so check that out. Check out the new video about concentration when you're shooting. Concentration and light, you know, a little bit on what that does for you to help improve your accuracy. I think you're going to like that. It's a short video, but it's a really good one. And don't forget about my Amazon store. The Amazon store, you can support this show without having to spend any extra money just by making your purchases on Amazon. Go to handgunworld.com, click the Amazon store, and use that link every time you go to Amazon. You know, do that before you sign into your account, and then I get, you know, credit and a little bit of a commission for things that you buy. Plenty of you have been doing it. Thank you very much for your support. All right, let's get to the next segment. Okay, Tom, thank you very much for sharing. As I've mentioned before, folks, this is stuff that we got to think about. And, you know, we're kind of all preppers at heart, aren't we? I mean, if you carry a gun or you own firearms and you train, or at least if you're serious about this, you're preparing for the worst, hoping for the best. And you're preparing in case your life is in danger or the life of a loved one. So be ready. Be ready for just about anything. And thank you, Tom, for sharing what you're going through in the Ferguson, Missouri area. That's some pretty interesting stuff. Pretty heavy stuff there to think about, isn't it? But you got to think about it. You know, the caller earlier that encountered the dog, and he mentioned something about, you know, hey, Bob, if you want to reprimand me for, you know, having a safety or whatever. I don't reprimand anybody. It's not my place to be reprimanding anybody. You know how I feel about two things. I don't care for safeties much, any kind of a safety. It's one of the reasons I don't like the XDS all that much. It does have a grip safety, and I've been playing around with it, trying to figure out if there's a way that I could grab the gun so that it won't fire. Yeah, you know, there is a way I could grab the XDS and fail to depress the grip safety. Failure to disengage it. Yeah, it would be a horrible grip. It would be a very horrible grip. But, you know, if I'm wrestling with somebody or if I'm having a physical altercation with somebody before I draw my gun, you know, it's possible that I can barely reach my gun in the first place. Getting a real good correct firing grip on it just might not be possible, you know, depending on how much I'm being wrestled around. So, you know, is that something I can 100% bet my life on? I don't think so, which is why I like guns that have no safety whatsoever. But I'm just making strong suggestions. That's all. Just making strong suggestions about what I think that you should do, what you should have on a defensive handgun, and in what I think. Now, there are plenty of people who carry 1911s, who do real well carrying 1911s. They've trained and trained and trained. Lots of people say, well, safety is a training issue. I mean, having a safety on your gun is a training issue. Of course, gun safety, that's a training issue too, but that's a different training issue. Yes, it is a training issue, but people who train to disengage a safety, let me ask you a question, especially those of you that have a thumb safety. Do you train to disengage that thumb safety when you're in a compromised position? In other words, do you train in the situation to where maybe you don't have the ability to get a real good grip on your gun? Do you train with somebody grabbing your strong arm and you have to draw with your weak hand? Do you ever think about that? How are you going to disengage the safety and the grip safety with your weak hand? What if both hands are compromised? What if both arms are compromised? Do you train in that situation like a force-on-force training? Because, you know, that's very much what real life is probably going to be like. So those of you that say that, you know, having a safety on your gun is a training issue, yeah, it's a training issue, but are you training for all possible scenarios and ways to disengage that safety in all possible scenarios? Some say, well, you know, on my 1911, I've got an ambi safety. Okay, yeah, that's good. You got an ambidextrous safety, and that might be a very good argument on a 1911. To have an ambidextrous safety in case your strong arm or your regular shooting arm or regular shooting hand is not available to you. But even if it is, it can be very difficult to always get a full grip. So anyway, I don't want to harp on that. But, you know, don't think that who am I to reprimand anybody? I'm no expert. So, but anyway, I want to thank him for calling in. I want to thank Tom for calling in, and let's move on. Okay, that's it for this episode. Thanks for listening to the 333rd episode of the Handgun World podcast. A little bit shorter than I normally put out in terms of a full episode, but hopefully it was hard-hitting enough and you got some things out of it, learned some things. Maybe it reminded you of what you already knew, but that you need to retrain on or brush up on or just be reminded of, because there's a benefit in that as well. Hey, my voicemail, if you want to call in, is 210-646-1727. That's 210-646-1727. One more time, 210-646-1727. Don't forget about my email, bob@handgunworld.com. And don't forget to catch me on Facebook, Twitter, and on YouTube. I got a YouTube channel with some pretty good videos on that. I forgot to mention that the Shooters Club is only $8 a month or $75 a year. That's $8 a month, $75 a year. Ben Branham's working on a book. All active Shooters Club members will get a free copy of his book. And so am I. So when mine comes out, you'll get a free copy of it as well. Another incentive to be a Shooters Club member. And you can go to handgunworld.com, click the Shooters Club page, or go to shootersclubmembers.com. I'm Bob Main. I carry a gun because I can't carry a cop. Remember, the loudest sound that a shooter hears is a bang when he's expecting a click, or a click when he's expecting a bang. Shoot straight, shoot safe. Talk to you next week. Goodbye. They back me.